This is E-Wave here on Near 90 FM of a Friday Eve with myself, George Mulcahy, coming up to 22 minutes now to 9. We're here until 10, slightly extended E-Wave tonight. You're being spoiled. Just after 9, I'll be joined by my old colleague, well, less of the old, TJ from Digital Dreams, and he's got a brand new album out, and it's called Love Letters from Cyberspace, and we'll feature that album as well this evening. Get involved, text me 087-6944500, that's 087-6944500, or you can phone me 867-1190, that's 867-1190. TJ has a brand new album out, it's called Love Letters from Cyberspace. I have it in my mitts at the moment, and we play three or four songs from that as we go along. As I promised earlier, this is Eden and the incredible Fortune Lost. And we'll be right back in one with the first track from the brand new TJ album. It's called Love Letters from Cyberspace, and we'll play Underneath the Perfect Sky. That's in one.
Your alternative.
Your alternative.
Across Northeast Dublin. It's Near 90 FM.
We cross the ocean.
If you're laughing on the outside and crying on the inside, tune into the God Talk program every Sunday from 4 to 4:30 p.m.
Tune into Equality Time
for up-to-date news affecting those living with a disability.
Employment,
education,
accessibility. So that's Equality Time every Wednesday at 3:30 p.m.
here on Near 90 FM.
www.near.ie. Text 087-6944-500. 087-6944-500. Get connected to Near 90 FM.
Lead the way to love.
I don't need for seasons to admit that time goes by underneath the perfect sky.
Well, there you go. That's TJ from the new album Love Letters from Cyberspace. And that is track number one from the album, which I have in my midst at the moment, Underneath the Perfect Sky. And you should be joined on the phone by TJ himself. Are you there?
Indeed you are. Good evening.
Hello. Welcome back, TJ, to E-Wave.
Thanks.
You're part of its history.
Yes.
So we'll talk about the new album in a moment, but can you remind people about some of the work that you've done?
Well, I did, obviously, this is my 12th album now.
12th?
My 12th album in total. Mm. And I've done quite a lot of techno and trance-based albums right from 1990 onwards, including work in and as Digital Dreams, in combination with a few female vocalists. And a few years back, I even got a songwriting award from VH1 for excellency in songwriting.
Excellent.
So I did loads of things. You know, it's just that in my mind, you know, I can't really put it into eras because, you know, in my mind, I just obviously continued writing songs and just put it out.
You're originally from Germany.
Yeah, from in and around Frankfurt, a place called Offenbach.
How long have you been in Ireland, TJ?
On the 3rd of August, it's going to be 10 years.
10 years. And what made you come here?
Basically, jobs. I was sent as a musician in Germany in the mid to late 90s. And then, you know, when I turned 30, it was difficult to stay self-employed because everybody was so hyped on looks. And then also, you know, I did techno and trance and dance floor and stuff. And it sort of ebbed out and really didn't go. And then someone suggested, you know, maybe I should try my luck in an office in Dublin. I said, okay, let's do that.
Is there much of a difference between Germany and Ireland?
I think, you know, I always...
German people seem to like a lot of the Celtic stuff that we produce, like Anya and Clara.
Yeah, I mean you U2 is quite big, obviously, in Germany. Anya is quite big. Anya is bigger in Germany than she is in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, but then what I do miss is that... on the other hand, all the electronic stuff that really sells well in Germany and is part of the German culture just doesn't do anything here. Mm-hmm. You were just mentioning it, that one of the bands there, Mesh, I think it is huge, you know, elsewhere, but just not here. Mm. So I sort of miss the electronic and electronica scene or the vastness of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, check out a band that I've been championing here on E-Wave for the past 3 years. They're called Eden. And I've played some of this stuff earlier on. They're stunning. Probably one of the best electronic pop bands I think I've ever heard.
Brilliant.
And they're from Dublin.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah. Oh, they're absolutely stunning. I went to see a gig to the launch of the album. Mm-hmm. And do check out as well a band called Hayfield and Empire State Human.
Okay.
Yeah, they're absolutely incredible. What kind of stuff did you listen to growing up, TJ?
Well, the first single I ever bought myself was Kraftwerk's We Are the Robots in 1977. But my mother obviously was a big Elvis fan. Mm. So I listened to Elvis and then Tom Jones.
Yeah.
And my father loved all these, you know, Glenn Miller and this kind of stuff. So even almost soundtrack like. But then also my I have a brother who's 15 years older, so he was into Jimi Hendrix. So it was sort of an eclectic mix of music I listened to. But what really influenced me in the early 80s, I was born in 67, so I was 13 in 1980. So Kraftwerk was a big influence, and I composed my first songs in the 80s, or early in 1980, actually. Mm-hmm. But then in 81, when I heard Depeche Mode, I just felt like, you know, this is exactly what I want to do music-wise. And even though I played in a heavy metal band, and it took a few years before they sort of manifested, it was really, really everything, you know, all the British sort of electronic pop, like Human League and all that kind of stuff, really, really influenced me.
Were they massive in Germany?
Say again?
Were the Human League and Depeche Mode huge in Germany?
I mean, Depeche Mode is still massive. As a matter of fact, the guys from Depeche Mode themselves, Martin Goa, recently said in an interview that their music appeals to disaffected youth and Germans.
Mm.
So they're massive in Germany. I mean, they play stadiums over there in no time, you know?
Well, the Germans seem to have a rather, I think, healthy obsession with Enjoy the Silence.
Oh yeah, it's a classic, and 20 years on, you know, people still sing it. And the funny thing is, my nephew is 7, he lives in Frankfurt, and he even knows the song.
I think it's the most played song by a British band on German radio.
That could well be. I mean, Depeche is really the number one selling band of all the electronics. They even outsold Kraftwerk in Germany.
Well, I heard the last album, and unfortunately they've massively lost the plot. It was awful.
Yeah, I think there were some good songs on it, but in total, you know, when you compare it to Playing the Angel, the album that he did prior to this one, I think it was Sound of the Universe, it's called, was much better and, you know, and much deeper. So I'm also a bit disappointed, but then, you know, there are a few songs where they really got it together.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening in Germany? I mean, you go back to, 2002, 2003, and there just seemed to be a cull. You know, all of a sudden, there was no electronic music at all in the German charts. And, you know, when you think of Germany, you think that it's synonymous with electronic music. And what happened?
I think what really happened is what happened to the rest of Europe as well, that most commercial radio stations are either owned or swamped by records that come from abroad, and they just play it.
And they're all shite.
They definitely are. Mm. But what happens is, you know, my sister used to work for Sony Music, and they have a sort of a saying there in the music industry that you just play the song long enough, and people eventually gonna like it. It's a bit like brainwashing. I never understood it. I felt, you know, in the mid-90s, I just felt like, you know, could I please hire a rocket and just get me to the moon? Because the whole Britpop thing just didn't do it for me.
Oh no!
And I was what's the story? What's going on here? You know, and then all these boy bands. Even though I think the exception was E17. I really liked them. They were a bit quirkier and a bit rougher, you know. But in all, I was just like, this was a really, you know, lost period in music.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, you know.
Now, we've got Heaven 17 back,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic.
It's
and
brilliant.
As I mentioned last week, Martin Ware from Heaven 17 and Phil Oakey have now patched up the differences. They didn't speak at all for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they played a gig together at the Galway Arts Festival there on July the 24th, I believe. And, as I mentioned earlier, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark are back as well with a brand new album.
A new album. Out in September, hopefully.
Yeah, History of Modern. Have you heard any of it?
Well, I have heard that they obviously have a new album because I interviewed Paul Humphries a few years ago.
Mm.
And he actually left a message on my website saying that he likes the music I make. So I was quite, you know, obviously being a fan of OMD, that's a nice thing to do. And I liked that. So, and also I saw them obviously the last two times when they came to Ireland.
Mm.
We went there. Also, you know, I'm a big fan of Martin Ware from Heaven 17 because he continued to obviously work in the industry even though when Heaven 17 wasn't working, he was producing Erasure albums. He did an album with Vince Clark of Depeche Mode and Erasure and Yazoo fame in 2000, where he basically used electronics as a sound wave for meditation. So I'm a big fan of his work.
Now, TJ, can I just talk about this new album, which is called Love Letters from Cyberspace, for a while. How long did this take to produce?
Interestingly, the last album, the one prior to this, Painted Dreams, was released in June 2009.
Hmm.
And then in September 2009, I did a few gigs around town, and one of my my vocal things there broke, so I couldn't record until October. And then I think end of September, October or something. And basically it only took me from February to June of this year to really record the album. There are a few tracks in between that I recorded prior to that, but most of the stuff I really recorded from February onwards.
And where was the album recorded?
I have my own studio now.
Okay.
And I think what makes a difference, the people that sort of know my work, and on my website, tj-music.com, people can listen to older stuff. And you can obviously tell, when you have your own studio, that the songs are usually a bit better crafted, because you don't have to go in there and say, well, you only have an hour or two. And I also notice that a lot of people say, oh, this is really quite romantic. And I think, obviously, the reason for this is when I look out the window, living in Benimo useless these days, you only have fields around. So it obviously, it has an impact on my songwriting.
Now, can I ask you about the writing process? With yourself, what comes first, the melody and then
mostly,
the words?
Mostly what it is, usually it's a melody first. But sometimes, I can't say because he's in the room, W, the dog, I just get ideas in my head. So I have snippets of lyrics and then find a melody towards it. But in most cases, I have only ideas or let's say a theme that I work with. And then I record the music according to the theme. And then once the song is completely recorded instrumentally, I sit down, play it back till I nearly puke and write the lyrics over it.
Right. Can I ask you, TJ, it's a radically different place, the music industry, now, as it was when you and I started buying records when we were kids.
That's true.
How do you feel about downloading stuff from iTunes and not going out and buying stuff in the physical form? Because
faceless. I'm a massive fan of artwork.
Yeah, same.
And I really think, in my mind, all you artists out there really have a think about this. If it's art that you're producing, don't just give someone a track and say you can download it on iTunes. That doesn't mean a thing. The artwork is also so important. It's part of the package. You can highlight who you are. You can convey more. It also shows that you really think about what you want to convey. Because in essence, I find music is communication.
Well, I always had a golden rule when I was buying albums. If it didn't come in an inner sleeve, I wasn't going to buy it.
Yeah.
Because on the inner sleeve, you get who produced, who wrote.
To this very day, I never downloaded a track in my whole life.
Never?
No. I obviously when I paid for LimeWire and did radio, then obviously I paid them to use it. But I never downloaded a track because I even when I talked to, I had the pleasure of talking to Carl Bartos from Kraftwerk, and it's just like nobody gets paid for it.
Yeah.
And also even when you play it on the radio, I rather swap CDs. I ask artists on MySpace and folks said, look, I got a radio show, I would play your stuff, and they send me the CD. And, it is just a different thing. So I personally never downloaded a track. And people have there's the argument that goes like, it doesn't make a difference to Depeche Mode whether or not you download that stuff. And that might be true. But it might make a difference to a smaller band.
Yeah.
Well,
I love taking out my albums at home, especially the Skids, The Absolute Game, which has, it's you can actually feel the images.
Mm.
In the front of it,
yeah.
And the four members of the band, and it's incredible. It looks like a marble slab, and it's just a stunning piece of work.
It's also historically, historically when you have albums there from a different, let's say from one artist, and you compare it over time, it gives you a sense of who the artist is. Even in my case, being 43 and heading towards my midlife crisis, I see the differences between the albums now, even optically, and the things that I did 10 years ago. And it just brings you back to that place. And you say, this is what I was about back then.
Do you think the whole idea of that sense of identity has been lost?
Well, maybe not lost, but definitely distorted. I was recently watching A Life in Pop by the Pet Shop Boys here, again on DVD, and they were saying that they find it quite odd, and I have to agree that people are put together as a band rather than, meet first, socialize first, become friends, and then, form a band. So, and there's something about that, isn't it?
Yeah. How do you feel about those casting shows, Thomas?
Well, to be honest, some of these acts really have talent. And I think, and obviously, it's not a bad idea for some of the people that really have talent to highlight it. But in essence, I find it odd, even if there's a guy sitting that has 40 years of experience, you have a guy that sings in front of you for the first time in his life. He's obviously not as good as he could be because he's nervous, and then they crucify him for not hitting a note. Mm. I think the whole concept is more like, you know, made out of bitchiness. I don't like the concept much. And also, you know, in all fairness, you have people on it that are not even musicians or don't write their own stuff, you know, even though, you know, not being bitching here, but look at Dani Minogue. You know, she's not a bad performer, but I don't think she really knows how music is created.
She's certainly not a patch on her sister.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm saying is, you know, I think, you know, there should be people that also know how to put together a song before they tell people what to sing and what not to sing and how to, you know, create a chorus and the hook, you know. I find it a bit odd. Yeah. It's like someone coming along that learned English from a book and then telling me how to speak it.
Mm. You know, so it's a bit kind odd. Of like music by numbers.
Yeah, it's a bit odd. You know, I'm certainly a big have no problems. I'm a self-taught mainly. I never really had any real education in music. You know, when I started working in a paid capacity in studios, then I had to make up for it. I needed to know what chords I'm playing. You know, but I can't read notes. So learning by doing is a good thing. On one hand side, on the other hand side, I really do believe that they really should. You know, I just don't get it. You have a 70-year-old girl, and they ask her, "What do you do?" And she says, "I work in the office." And she's like, "Don't lose your day job." And they think it's funny because they said it to Elvis, obviously, in the 50s. You know, don't lose your day job.
Did you just say, Thomas, that you can't read notes?
Well, I can't read notes. No,
you can't read music.
No, I can't read music. What I can do, obviously, if somebody says to me, you know, what notes they are, I can play the chords. And right. That's how I usually work. So if somebody gives me the notes and it has the speed and the chords, I can play along.
So how do you actually write?
Well,
obviously,
I know the chords and obviously I know the octaves and all that. Yeah. So when I have an idea of what I write, so of course I write it down in notes so I can also remember it. You know, but I usually write from the heart. So I have, like I said, I have an idea in my head, a melody or some lyrics, and then I just see how would that feel. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I also write optically, and what that means is I'm out and about and see, you know, hit a Blessington Lakes or something, and it evokes an image, and this image plays in my head. And then I say, how would you know, the lake sound musically? And I try to convey that.
Well, I was talking to an artist recently who went out and got one of those dictaphones. Mm-hmm. And any time he gets an idea or a little bit of a melody, he just takes out the dictaphone and hums into it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where. He could be on the bus, he could be on the Lewis, the yep. Dart.
That's a good idea. It never really worked for me because I'm, you know, I just have this idea. If I can sing it and remember it, then it's a good thing. But sometimes you just play it back and you say, did I do that? I know that obviously all the guys with the Bee Gees, they do that. They all have the dictaphones even today. That's when they're out and about and record things, you know.
So, well, you're in good company because Chris de Burgh can't read or write music. Yeah. Neither can Ian from Eden. So.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people can't. And I think it's still, you know, doesn't take away from the artistry. You know, it's still the essence is, I find, you know, the essence is, it's storytelling. So, you know, can you tell a story? Can you convey feelings? I find it, for instance, I met loads of musicians over the years who were much better players, keyboarders, because they could really play. Mm. And they would play stuff that is 60 years old, they could really play it, but they couldn't create. And I think that's the difference.
Well, Ian was telling me that he was playing a piece of music in front of somebody. And he played a note, and the guy said, "Stop! No, that's not a note." And he says, "What do you mean it's not a note? Of course it's a note. You know, because you say it's not a note, doesn't mean it's a note."
Exactly. And it's funny. I gave a workshop in Ferns last week, and when I came back to the B&B, they had a 25-year-old girl who had just composed some of her first song, and she performed it there for the people. And so I was there, and we started jamming. And it was really interesting, you know, to see people saying, "Look, you know, I'm in a B&B. I don't know anybody, but I play you my song." And we got into jamming and sang some Elvis tunes. And it's quite nice to see. It's quite refreshing to see young people saying, like, you know, even though I might get that wrong, I give it a try. Mm. So I like that, you know. And music is obviously or should be also about spontaneity, like, you know, doing something
I just want to switch back to something we were talking about earlier, the internet. We now have Facebook and MySpace and, to a lesser extent, Bebo. How important are those social networking sites for an artist like yourself?
Well, to be honest, I use MySpace, but I don't use it as often as Facebook. Mm. I used to obviously use it much more before Facebook sort of became bigger. I think it's a good thing to have, because obviously you can spread your music easier. But what I don't believe is, and that's the thing, obviously, how they said it. They tell me, potentially 1 million people listen to your music. When you look at how many people have actually found their way to my website or to my MySpace page, is about 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. So I don't have 1 million people because they don't know about me still. So, so the concept of you become a huge star when you're on MySpace is a bit odd. Having said that, obviously, some of the bands that you hear put out their tracks either for download or just for listening and highlight their own CDs. And I have swapped CDs with other musicians and played them on my numerous shows. Yeah. So it's not a bad thing. I just think that what I would like to see is instead of saying we have the battle of the bands, because it's always competition, I would rather see an evening where people can just highlight their tracks without being competitive. You could have an electronic, sort of a music appreciation club even, So that's something I would like to see.
Just want to backtrack a little bit. We mentioned radio there a while back. How responsive has radio been towards TJ?
It depends, really. Funnily enough, their CD Baby is something. It's an American thing. You just send your CD there, and they try and get it onto radio. And a lot of my CDs have been played actually in Japan and in America. There's a radio station for listeners, they call it. And I had an album out in 2000 called Midnight Dreamer, which was even slower than the new one, and it made it into heavy rotation. Mm-hmm. And I've been on radio a couple of times in the States. Which is quite odd, because electronic music is absolutely not on their radar at all. So German radio is very unresponsive, simply because community radio station, even though it's big, they all are just playing techno. The minute you drop below 120 beats, they're not going to play it. Mm. And it's very sort of organized in a sense. They rather play what they know gets them listeners. I don't find them very. Supportive for unsigned artists.
Well, I don't understand America at all. I think the way they work their radio playlisting is bizarre.
Yeah.
Completely bizarre.
Yeah.
How we managed to get a Lady Gaga out of it, I think, is an absolute miracle. Big Lady Gaga fan, I have to say.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, what goes on, from record company to the A&R guy to the guy who runs the radio station, and the fact that it could take a record 6 months, a year, 18 months to incubate. I know America's a big place, but the system should be fundamentally simple. But in America, you need to go to university for 4 years to understand it.
I think the problem that you have in America is that it is, in essence, a country where they all say it's the land of the free. I actually don't believe that. I've been to the States a couple of times. I gave a talk there as a pet psychologist in 2008. And, the real freedom that European artists have in Europe, you don't have it. I was talking to my auntie there, about Eurasia and all them. And the very fact that one guy in Eurasia is gay still means they're not going to get airplay. And you kind of think this is so... old-fashioned.
Well, the Pet Shop Boys got that.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
But the Pet Shop Boys also are really only played in the dance stations, or on the dance stations. Hmm. They're not really that mainstream either.
And it is a shame, because was that little era in the mid-90s, from about 94 to about 97, when you had lots of kind of Europop stuff that broke through. I'm talking about LaBouche, Be My Lover, massive.
Brilliant.
And LaBouche's alter ego, Le Click, who sold 8 million albums, which was more than the last Eminem album did.
Absolutely.
That's how massive it was. But for some bizarre reason, 1997, the US decides to switch the light off and no more electropop.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? That's why I think it's so important. I'm not patronizing when I say that, because it's true. It's so important to have shows like EVAs. And to have shows where people say, look, let's play electronic music.
Yeah.
Let's just highlight something that you think is good, and that, you know, people just appreciate it, because music should be appreciated. It's not really about, because it always starts with how young you are, how you look, you know, because it's this whole package, you know. So it's still a bit odd. How, you know, even, you know, I mean, it even happens to me when I work on a cover, that I have these ideas and say, you know, maybe I shouldn't be on it because I'm old. When in fact I'm only 43, it's not old.
Well, I was 45 yesterday. So
yeah, I know.
You're catching up on me. But I know, TJ, music is not your only passion. You have a massive passion for animals, and on the inlay card, there's a nice little message: for the animals, for the planet, go vegan.
Yes, absolutely.
Where did that passion for animals come from? And how is Charlie, by the way?
Well, he's lying next to me here.
Is he?
And he's absolutely brilliant.
Is he massive?
Yeah, he's still.
He's the White Alsatian.
You know, White Alsatian, but he's gorgeous. You know,
yeah.
Basically, what happens, you know, is I always sort of, you know, as a child we had cats and what have you, and only as an adult did I ever have dogs. But I always felt, you know, something about animals, and I always, what I liked about them, especially when you're an artist, I was the only artist in the family. So when I was seven, you know, sort of pre-music years, I was cutting out stuff from the magazines and had my own stories, you know. I was always using the same actors that I could find and would do stories. So it becomes sort of a black sheep because you're odd, you know. For you know, to the rest of the family, you appear odd because you're just creative, and it just seems like, oh, something odd with him, what's wrong with him. And I noticed straight away that animals couldn't care less what I do. So I find, you know, so this unconditional stuff that they do, I liked. And then obviously, you know, I do a lot of spiritual work. And in one of the meditation groups that I did years ago, I learned about spiritual guides. And my deceased dog came back in one of the meditations, and I had to actually had happened to me before I believed it actually, and then I just felt like, you know, okay, let's just give something back to animals, and started studying pet psychology and holistic animal healing, and from there on I started working in shelters, and now it's sort of a regular thing, you know.
Well, we have a little Jack Russell called Theo, who most of the time is the nicest dog in the world, unless somebody comes to the door or somebody walks past with another dog. Here's a good one. He absolutely goes ballistic, and I mean chicken oriental, when you take the Hoover out. Now, I have a theory that he thinks I'm taking the Hoover out for a walk, and he might be getting jealous.
That could well be. Most of the time, to be honest, it's a sound they don't like. You know, because dogs don't recognize size, so they're not easily scared. The thing with terriers is that they have been bred for killing mice, so they're notorious. They're notorious for chasing.
Yeah.
So everything that has a lead that resembles a tail is potentially a threat.
Well, our little Theo absolutely adores chasing flies.
Oh.
And he's brilliant at catching them.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of like entices them down. You know?
Charlie does that. He tries to get all the bumblebees in the garden, you know.
Ooh,
yeah, but he's not always successful. At least he doesn't go for wasps or bees, you know, so he's clever.
So have you any events coming up, TJ?
Well, I'm actually planning a gig or two, but I have to look into it and see about venues and stuff.
Yeah.
So at the moment I'm just sort of, you know, doing a little bit of the radio circuit, and I got plenty of reviews, and they're all up. I have a blog, Love Letters from cyberspace.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
And I'm quite surprised how much love the album is. Because, you know, to my mind it's new, so I never quite know, do I like it or don't I like it, and I just noticed that it's less electronic than the one before. It's more, has an acoustic feel to it, you know. But apparently a lot of people like it, so I'm like, well, good, let's go along with it.
I think there's a lot of kind of like narrow-mindedness within, you know, the whole rock scene, but I think there's a lot of narrow-mindedness as well within the whole electronic music scene. And I don't think it's a bad thing to pick up the old guitar every so often. And
exactly,
because I mean the way you can learn music, you know, using either the guitar as a bed or the keyboards as a bed, there's no limit to the imagination of that process.
There shouldn't be, you know. And I also never get this, and, you know, I remember back in the day when I was working sort of in the studio, and they were saying to me, you know, if you want this to be played on the radio, it shouldn't be longer than 3.5 minutes. Then you can't sit there with a timer and compose a song.
Try telling that to Laurie Anderson of Oh Superman fame, which was 8 minutes 15 seconds. Peter Gabriel's Biko, which was a massive hit, number one. That was 8 minutes 10 seconds. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, which was over 5 minutes. Radio Gaga by Queen, which was 5:58.
Hey Jude, I think, was in history, was the first single that was longer than 5 minutes and got made into a single. And I'm not saying, write an opera and put it out there. I'm not talking about 8 to 10 minute songs, but I just think, if you have something you want to convey and a song needs to develop for the message to get across or for the feelings to really be carried, then this is what, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes.
Most of the Lady Gaga stuff is 4 or 5 minutes long, is it not?
Yeah, and I think it's a good trend because now, people are not too fuzzy about it.
I think people can cram too much into something, too quick.
Absolutely.
I think it's great when you can create space within a piece of music, particularly within electronic music.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan. I mean, obviously my music is very chill out and trance, so I often have longer instrumental passages. Just because I really do believe that sound creates emotion. And it's the way it should be. I think the problem that you often have is that a lot of musicians, when they get a chance to record, they go into the studio and then there's sort of 20 keyboards stacked up and they try to use them all rather than sticking to the song.
Do you find living in the sticks, TJ, is an advantage for you in the fact that you don't have the distraction of cars and people going by your house every 2 seconds?
Big time, absolutely. It's also especially sort of music, can often be described as noise by some. It gives me an immense, almost like, here you are, compose away and you do your electronic stuff and then you go out and you meet this wall of silence and all you hear is a few birds.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing feeling, I even put batteries in my keyboards and write a song in the garden if we have the weather every now and then.
Well, we had a chap in college who came in and did a few workshops with us, and I think his name, Slavik.
Oh, yeah.
And what he did was he took sound recording equipment into the Amazon and spent all of December of 2008 in the Amazon, just himself and his wife. And what he does is he creates this spatial landscape of sound and makes music out of it, but it's all completely natural.
It's brilliant.
Absolutely stunning stuff.
And again,
really amazing.
It goes to show that there shouldn't be boundaries. And, obviously, if people like it, why not?
I mean, even stuff that he was doing with a balloon, just making music out of a balloon, by pulling the top of it and narrowing the amount of air coming out, which, incredible.
Yeah.
And there we all were, all 8 of us playing with balloons in college. How sad. But it was great fun. Had me mammy seen it, she would have said, "You make mistakes in life, Mr. Mulcahy, get it alive." Listen, TJ, the album is called Love Letters from Cyberspace. I've listened to the whole lot of it. It's a great piece of work, and well done to you.
Thanks.
Well done.
Thanks.
And I'll review it, and I'll send you off a copy of the review.
That would be nice, and I'll put it up on my website.
Enjoy
it.
Again, for people who want to contact you, are you on MySpace?
I'm on MySpace. It's MySpace/TJElectronicPop.
Okay.
Or my website is TJ-music.com.
Right then, should we play something else from it?
Absolutely.
Okay, what about Nothing?
Nothing, exactly.
Great stuff. Well, TJ, thanks a mil.
Thank you so
for
much.
For talking to us, and come back on any time you like.
Thanks.
Okay, see you, TJ.
Bye-bye.
Say hi to charity for me.
Will do.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
See you, TJ. Bye-bye.